Okay, so those are some reflections to share with you. What I'd like to do now is open it up for questions and comments.
Hello.
Yeah.
Sorry, Venerable. I'd like to ask you a question. Just now you were speaking about people constantly blaming others. There's one thing that comes to my mind, which is that in Asian society, there's another worrying trend, which is a lot of people blaming themselves much more.
Yeah.
So if there was one thing that you could tell to someone who has very low self-esteem and having a lot of self-blame, what would it be?
Am I limited to one thing?
Yeah, you could always choose to speak more.
Okay. So somebody who's suffering from low self-esteem, who's blaming themselves, what kind of advice would I give them? First of all, to recognize that they have the potential to become a fully enlightened Buddha. And that Buddha nature is the nature of their mind. It is inseparable from their mind. So they can never lose their Buddha nature. So there's something pure and good about them. And they just have to spend some time uncovering it and cultivating it and letting it rise up. Okay? So I think, one, knowing the basic purity of the mind, just having some sense of that, some sense of our potential as human beings. No matter what we've done in our lives until now, we all have the Buddha nature, the Buddha potential. So that's one thing I would tell somebody who suffers from low self-esteem. Second thing I would tell that person is to cultivate a kind heart towards others. Now you're going to say, well, wait a minute. How can they cultivate a kind heart towards others if they don't like themselves? Well, very true. So you have to like yourself, okay, to have a kind heart for others too. But also, I think what happens when people have low self-esteem is that they're spending too much time thinking about themselves. Okay? So when we get into this thing of blaming ourselves and low self-esteem, then we have this record going on in our mind. I do everything wrong. I'm a failure. I'm no good at this. I'm no good at that. We tell ourselves the story all the time. And then we waste so much time and energy thinking that that story is true. Actually, it's not true. Okay? So instead of spending so much time being depressed and being insecure, you know, just stop thinking about ourselves so much and go out and be of benefit to somebody else. Go out and act with a kind heart. Because if we put our attention on other people and the welfare of other people, then automatically we're going to be less ego-sensitive ourselves and we're going to feel better about ourselves because we're really contributing to the welfare of others. So this, you know, again, doesn't mean we need to all go out and be Mother Teresa, because there's only one Mother Teresa, but it does mean that whatever way we can extend our heart and extend some kindness to others, that much more it's going to really improve our own self-esteem.
Thank you.
Okay.
I want to personally thank you for two of your books, this Buddhism for Beginners and Working with Anger. This helps me a lot. And can I ask you, in your book you mentioned that karma cannot be dedicated. I mean, you sow the seed, you harvest the fruit. Is there any way that you can do something, example, for your parents that will benefit them? That is one part of my question. The other one is referring one of the book by His Holiness Dalai Lama, the same title on the ways to meaningful life. When I thought I understand the concept of emptiness, when things or entity don't exist on its own, but it's all interconnected, he integrate this with this Four Noble Truths, saying that there's no suffering, so there's no cost to the suffering. At the end, there's no cessation to suffering because there's no suffering, so eventually there's no path to the cessation of the suffering. So eventually I was thinking, meaning there's no Four Noble Truths after all. Huh? So maybe you can enlighten me on this point as well.
Okay.
I'm very new to Buddhism, so maybe a little bit slow there.
Okay. I think it's really great that you ask your questions. So your first question was about benefiting your parents, okay? First of all, when your parents are alive, before they die, encourage them to create positive karma. Okay, that's the best way to benefit your parents. Don't wait until they die. Okay, benefit them while they're alive by encouraging them to make offerings, by encouraging them to be kind. Don't encourage them to lie or to do other things like that, but really encourage them to have good ethical values and principles. That's the best way to help your parents. Now, after they die, a way to help them, although we cannot transfer karma to them because everybody creates their own karma and experiences the result of their own action, what we can do is we can make offerings on their behalf, or we can, do any kind of virtuous action and then dedicate the positive potential accumulated from that virtuous action towards the benefit of our parents. Okay? So what this dedication means is that we're, through our own virtuous actions, we're sending all that good energy towards them, and that good energy creates a way for their own good karma to ripen. Okay? So you're right, we can't transfer our good karma to somebody else's mind stream. You know, it's not like doing a wire transfer from one bank account to the next. You know, karma's not like that. But what we can do is through doing virtuous actions and dedicating it for our deceased parents, then it sets up that good energy, you know, around them, and then hopefully their own good karma will ripen in that energy. Okay. Now, as for your second question, about the Four Noble Truths and emptiness.
Can I comment on the first one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You were mentioning, because I know the folks, when they are alive, it's not easy to get them to do things that they are not willing to.
Oh, yeah, I know.
because we are we and they are they.
Yeah.
So is there any way that we can do things, I wouldn't say without them knowing, but, you know.
Without
them knowing. I wouldn't say without them knowing, but
uh-huh.
Do something and then hopefully will benefit them.
Yeah. Okay, so you're talking about one situation in which you try and encourage your parents to do some virtuous actions, but they're resistant. Yeah, then
they don't resist. No, they don't resist. Not that they resist, but is there any additional thing that I can do?
If you live your own life in a good way, then you show them by your example how to have a happy mind.
That I'm already doing, or try to do.
Okay. But we can't make anybody else do anything. But we can try and you know, actually with anybody, you know, whether it's your parents or your children, if you live a good life, you're setting a good example for other people about how to be kind and how to be happy. Okay. Then the second question, and this relates to the Heart Sutra. Many of you may be familiar with the Heart Sutra, where Avalokiteshvara is saying, you know, there's no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, okay? No suffering, no cause of suffering, no cessation of the suffering, no path, okay? What that means is not that these things, it doesn't mean that these things don't exist, okay? Because clearly we have eyes, don't we? We have ears, we have nose, we have, we have a mind. Suffering exists, the cause of suffering. All these things exist. But what is meant when we say, you know, in the context of the Heart Sutra, there's no this and no that, is it means that there's no inherently existent suffering, no inherently existent cause of suffering, no inherently existent cessation of suffering, no inherently existent path to the cessation of suffering. Okay? Because inherent existence means something that is solid, that stands on its own, that is independent and unrelated to anything else. And things, we think things exist that way. Things appear to our senses to exist that way, as if they had their own essence. But they don't exist that way. Everything exists in a dependent way. Okay? So when it's saying no, there's no this and there's no that, it doesn't mean on a conventional level that none of these things exist. It means that all of these things are not inherently existent, but they do exist dependently. Okay? I have a couple of written questions here. Okay, what are the benefits of liberating animals? And yet, why are some Buddhist masters against it? Okay, the benefits of liberating animals are, first of all, the animals are happy. You know, they have a long life. So we're benefiting sentient beings. Also, by saving sentient beings who are going to die, then we purify any negative karma, you know, we purify negative karma we have created from killing, because we're doing the opposite of killing, which is saving life. We're also creating the cause to have a long life and to be healthy ourselves. So these kind of benefits accrue from liberating animals. Now, I haven't encountered any Buddhist masters who are against it, but what I do know is that we have to liberate the animals in a proper way. Okay? So we need to be environmentally conscious when we liberate the animals. I remember in the U.S. somebody called me, some newspaper called me, they wanted to interview me about this, because they were afraid that people were buying a certain kind of fish and liberating it in a lake in which that fish would then eat all sorts of other animals and destroy the ecological balance in the lake. Okay? So clearly, if you're going to liberate animals, you don't want to do it in a way that destroys the ecological balance and creates a lot of other harm in the environment. Okay? You want to do it in a way where that animal can live and where nobody else is harmed in the process of it. Okay, so you said that there's no need to be number one or to be the best. But isn't it true that if we strive to be the best, we can draw out our greatest potential? Will the non-competing nature make one complacent and become mediocre? Well, it would seem that way. However, I don't think it actually functions that way. Okay? Because I know for myself, when I become competitive, I actually am not functioning at my best. Okay? Because when I'm competitive, I'm nervous, I'm stressed out. Okay? When we're nervous and we're stressed out, are we really doing our best? I don't think so. I think we really do our best when our mind is relaxed, when it's happy, when we have a good motivation. I think that makes us do our best. Okay. So I think letting go of competition, but instead wanting to do our best because it's a benefit to sentient beings, that helps us to bring out our best and to not be mediocre. Are you getting what I'm saying? So I'm not saying that you give up competition and then you just sit there going, duh, you know, because competition was the only thing that made you get out of bed in the morning. Okay? Not like that. But rather, we try and use our own unique talents and abilities because we really want to make a positive contribution to society, because we really want to benefit others. And so we have a positive motivation, but we're not tense and stressed out and constantly looking at the other person to see if we're better than them. Okay? You want to ask a question? Okay.
Yeah, okay. I've read quite a number of books on Buddhism. The philosophy is really practical book. Practical, rather. When it comes to mentioning about past life and future life,
mm-hmm.
I find, okay, is there a way to find such an evidence for myself as an experiential level?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there any method apart? I mean, is meditation the only method? Or maybe there's any other methods?
Okay, so you're asking about a way to experience the past life. Okay, I think it's better to experience this life. Yeah, past life's gone. Yeah, I don't think it's particularly important to remember what we did in our past lives. What's more important is how we live this life. Okay, but knowing that we had past lives, then we know that we created some good karma, we created some bad karma, and that's going to be ripening in this life and influencing what we become. Okay? So when we have happiness, thinking, oh, this is a result of my past karma from previous lives, by being kind, by being generous, so I like this result, I'm going to continue to create that kind of cause. Or when we have suffering, instead of complaining, thinking this is the result of my own negative actions in the past life, so I better get my act together and not do these kinds of negative actions again in the future. So that way of thinking can actually help us in this life. But sitting and, you know, kind of, you know, who was I in my past life? What did I do in my past life? That's not so important. Okay.
Okay, but just a bit more. Okay, it's about not say who I was in the past,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that there's such thing called past life.
Okay.
So that it's more like, I mean, if you know there's a past life, then there will be a future life.
Mm-hmm.
But if there isn't a past life, then maybe this is the only life with it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Okay. So I think a way to do this, what I found most helpful,
yeah,
is to think about it in logically. Okay.
Okay? Yes,
each moment of consciousness that we have came from a cause. Consciousness doesn't come without a cause, does it? You know, our consciousness right this very moment came from a cause, which was the consciousness of the previous moment. Okay? Our consciousness of the previous moment came from a cause, the consciousness of the moment before that. So what we find here is that we have one moment of consciousness arising from another moment of consciousness. And this can be traced back. So we can see that there's a continuity of consciousness back to the time when we were children. We may not remember everything in our life, but we know that there's a continuum of one moment of consciousness being created by another moment of consciousness, back to the time we were kids, back to the time we were infants, even back to the time when we were in our mother's womb. There was consciousness at that time, okay, even though we don't remember. Yeah. So if we trace the continuity of our consciousness in this life back and back and back, you know, to childhood, to infancy, to being a fetus in our mother's womb. Then when we come to the time of conception, we have to ask, where did that first moment of consciousness in this life come from? Okay? We can't say it came without a cause, because nothing comes without a cause. Nothing can be created without a cause. Until now, we've had one moment of consciousness arising from a previous moment, so too at the moment of conception, there, that moment of mind arose because there was a previous moment of mind. And so in that way, we can trace back this continuity of consciousness into previous lives. Okay? And we could just keep tracing it back, and actually there was no beginning to consciousness at all. In fact, it's impossible that there's a beginning. Yeah? Because if you posit a beginning, then you have to ask what existed before the beginning. If something existed before the beginning, which was the cause of the beginning, then the beginning wasn't the beginning. Okay? If nothing existed before the beginning, then how out of nothing could you have something arise? Because nothing comes into originate, nothing originates without a cause. Okay? So if we just think about it logically, you know, we see that there's just this continuity of consciousness, one moment being created by the previous moment. Okay?
Thanks.
Sure.
Venerable, I have a question regarding what you mentioned just now. You mentioned about the importance of developing kindness instead of competing and comparing ourselves with others, and also to accept ourselves so as to develop our own unique potential. Now, our society has always emphasized on being the best in school, sometimes to the point that it breeds elitism. So how can we put this to practice in our lives? And how can we find peace by just being ourselves with our own unique talent? Thank you.
It's a very good question, you know, because you're asking in a society in which we have so much pressure to be best and to compete, how do we live? You know, and I think this is the same thing. We have to be brave and not necessarily go along with everything we learn in society. Okay? So if society is going down a wrong path, we don't need to go there with it. Okay? So even if everybody else around us is in this frenzy of competition, 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 that doesn't mean we need to go along with it. We can still be relaxed. We can still be happy. We can still cultivate a compassionate heart. We can cultivate a mind of contentment. And we can still make a positive contribution to society, and maybe a better contribution, because we're not going to be so neurotic. Okay? So you just have to have a bit of self-confidence. If some value in society is not helpful, and if it's harmful, you don't need to live by it. Yeah, you can just let it go. You have to, you know, have your own kind of sense of your own dignity, your own values, and live according to them. Okay? No? Because you might live in a society where, you know, I mean, sometimes society really does have wrong values. You know, we think sometimes society thinks killing is good. Yeah, when one nation kills another, if it's our nation killing another nation, we think killing is good. If it's another nation killing our nation, then killing is bad. Huh? Excuse me? I don't get it. Yeah? So if you find these kind of non sequiturs in the just kind of the general way of society, we don't need to think along that line. We don't need to agree with it. We can still have our own values and principles and live a very ethical, good life. Hmm?
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I'm here. I'm over here.
Okay.
I have a question. Now, I'm a bit upset by one Buddhist concept.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a common question in our life, commonly asked. Why do good people suffer and bad people have all the blessings sometimes? Now, mm-hmm. The Buddhist answer is that because we can lead a good life in this present life, but because of our bad karma in our past life,
mm-hmm.
it overwhelms our good deeds. Now, this one, to me, is a bit unsettling. We demoralize people like me. And if bad people today, they have all the blessings because of the good karma, they find that it's unfair. Because, as you say, what's important is this life.
Mm-hmm.
And they compare everything in this life, not the past and the future. Thank you.
Okay, so you're asking the question of why do good people suffer and bad people have good fortune. Okay, first of all, I'd like to say that there's no such thing as good people and bad people. Okay? Because all people have the Buddha nature. Everybody's totally equal in having the Buddha nature. So I don't think you can say somebody's a bad person. And if you look at all of us, we all do some good actions and we all do some bad actions, right? We're all a mixture. Mm-hmm. So there's nobody, I mean, unless you're a Buddha. Okay, we'll make an exception for a Buddha. We'll make an exception for the high-level bodhisattvas. They don't create any negative karma. As for the rest of us, you know, we're a mixture. And it is not the case that even within this lifetime, the people who are unethical are happy and the people who are ethical are miserable. In fact, I think it's the exact opposite. Because if we're unethical, we don't feel good within ourselves. We may have wealth, but wealth doesn't mean beans if you don't feel good about yourself. Okay? So if we act in unethical ways, you know, like let's say you're a CEO of a business and you do all sorts of dirty business and you cheat people and you swindle and you embezzle and you have 5 luxury houses and 2 jet planes, you know, are you going to be happy? Yeah, you have to still live with yourself. How do we feel about ourselves when we know we've acted unethically? Yeah? We feel lousy about ourselves. We may put on this big thing about I'm rich, I'm famous, da 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 da. But when we're alone with ourselves, we don't feel good. We don't feel happy. Yeah? When we have a peaceful heart, a kind heart, yeah, then whatever we do, we feel contentment about it. Whether we have a lot of money or don't, whether people like us or don't like us, we can still have happiness by the power of what our attitude is towards life. Okay? So I think real happiness and unhappiness are not measured by how much money we have, how much status we have, what kind of reputation we have, but real happiness and suffering are measured by how we live with ourselves inside of our own heart. Hmm? Okay, so that's why I think that if we live in an ethical way, we do experience good things. We may not be wealthy, but that doesn't mean anything, because wealth doesn't necessarily make you happy. Now you think I'm completely crazy, don't you? What do you mean wealth doesn't make you totally happy? We've got to have more. We've got to have better. Yeah. I disagree.
Venera?
Yeah.
I thought I'd like to add maybe it's a question on the topic of releasing animal,
mm-hmm.
because Vesak Day is coming, and
yeah.
I think that is a practice. I think the issue is that all this releasing is creating a market demand, and that actually causes people to capture animal and birds. So do you have any comment on that?
Okay. So getting back to the thing of liberating animals, so it makes people capture animals. Yeah. I think the best kinds of animals to liberate are the ones that are going to be killed. Not necessarily the birds that are captured, because the birds that are captured are still alive. So if you don't liberate the birds who are captured, then nobody's going to capture birds to sell them to people who are going to liberate them. Okay? But if you liberate animals that are going to be killed, okay, then you're really saving life. And if you can stop eating meat, then you're really saving life. Oh, now you don't like me. But my question is, when you eat meat or fish or chicken, you're eating somebody else's body for lunch. Okay? Do you want somebody else to eat your body for lunch? Do you? You know, none of us want somebody else to say, "Oh, that looks so good, I want to eat you for lunch." You know? None of us want somebody to eat us for lunch. So if we don't want people to eat us for lunch, maybe we should treat other living beings with that same respect and not eat them for lunch. Okay.
Venerable Choran.
Yeah.
Yeah. One last question.
Okay.
I know that you are the founder of Sravasti Abbey.
Uh-huh.
So over here there is a prayer request. Can you explain what is the significance of this?
Ah, okay.
Thank you.
Sure. So, yes, I am the founder, whatever that means, of Sravasti Abbey. It's a monastery in the U.S., probably the first monastery in the Tibetan tradition in the U.S. where monastics can go and prepare for ordination, where monks and nuns can live an ordained life without having to worry about their livelihood. So we just got the land 2.5 years ago. We're in the process of setting it up right now. And so there's some people living at the Abbey, and we practice together as a community. One of them is preparing for ordination. A few other people are considering ordination. And so there's on the brochure the thing about prayer requests, saying that the people at the Abbey will do prayers. So what this means is, it's what I was saying before about dedicating the merit. Is, you know, when we other people can make prayers for us, and that sends good energy our way, or it sets. It's hard to explain. You know, it's not like, you know, energy comes, zoom, you got it. But it's like there's, you know, when somebody's thinking good thoughts and sending their loving kindness towards you, that creates a good atmosphere around you whereby your own good karma can ripen. Okay? So the idea is that when you make offerings, when you're generous, then you're creating good karma. And then when the people you make offerings to dedicate for your welfare and your benefit, then they're sending that loving kindness towards you, which helps your own good karma ripen. So that's the idea behind the prayers that we do. And many people feel quite good knowing that other people are praying for them, knowing that there's some source of goodness in this world where people are very conscientiously and consciously cultivating positive thoughts towards others and sending that goodwill their way. And I think this is really the purpose of a monastery or a temple, and how monks and nuns function in society is because when you might be doing your regular things in society, and you might watch the 6 o'clock news and think, my goodness, what's going on in the world? But then when you think of people who are monastics, who are deliberately trying to create good ethical discipline, and who are meditating on loving kindness and sending that loving kindness and dedicating their virtue to everybody on the planet, to everybody in the universe. When you think about the existence of people like that in our planet, it gives you some feeling of hope and some inspiration. So I think that having monastics and monasteries is very important for any society, because it gives you that feeling that there's goodness in the world and that there's people who are actively contributing to the good energy in the world. Okay, so that's the meaning behind us doing the prayers and dedications. And then other people create good karma by being generous when they help support others who are intent on virtue. Okay. Let's just sit quietly for a minute before we stop.
Oh. If you say the past life is not important, why do you care about the future?
Why do I care about what?
The future.
The future. What I meant when I said past life wasn't important was that remembering specifically who we were in a past life is not important. Okay? What we did in a past life is important because it creates the cause for what we are now. But in any case, the past is the past. The future hasn't come yet. So the future is important because we're creating the cause for what we're going to be in the future.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's just sit quietly for a moment. So bring your attention to your own kind heart. Okay? Get in touch with that part of you that wishes yourself and wishes all other living beings well. Get in touch with that part of you that really wishes that people are peaceful inside, that people be content, that people are joyful to help and serve each other. And from that space of your own good heart, rejoice at all the goodness there is in the world. Think of all the positive actions that have been created today of different people helping others with motivations of kindness. And rejoice in all of that goodness. Think of the holy beings, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and all their virtuous actions. And rejoice in it. Let it really uplift your heart. And then let's take all that positive energy, that positive potential, and dedicate it, send it out. You can even imagine it as light radiating out from your heart. Okay, so send your own positive potential out into the world, thinking that it's magnified, that it increases, and it goes out to each and every living being, touching them, pacifying their mind, bringing them internal peace. Peace that's free from low self-esteem. Peace that's free from depression. And so, in this way, let's dedicate so that everybody can be peaceful within their own heart, live peacefully together with others, and think of benefiting others. Let's dedicate so that the Buddha's teachings will exist in a pure way in our universe and in our mind forever. Let's dedicate so that everybody has all positive and conducive circumstances so that they can practice the Buddha's teachings and attain full enlightenment. Let's dedicate so that we can help each other along the path in this life and in all future lives. May we only do what benefits each other and helps each other gain enlightenment. Let's dedicate so that we have a very brave and courageous mind that is undeterred in our virtuous aims and in our positive motivations. And let's dedicate so that every living being can quickly be freed of all sufferings forever, can actualize all their potential and bring to fruition their Buddha potential. May everybody become a fully enlightened Buddha.